Welcome to the 52nd episode of Warriors Off Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Warriors beat writer Connor Letourneau, and today I'm joined by Chronicle sports writer Rusty Simmons. Warriors fans probably remember Rusty for his time covering Golden State from 2009 to 2016. Now, after a couple years on the Cal beat, he's back helping out with Warriors coverage. After Golden State's routed the Clippers Sunday night at Oracle Arena, I sat down with Rusty. We'll have our conversation right after the break. Rusty Simmons and I chatted in Oracle Arena's lower bowl after what was the Warriors' final regular season game at Oracle Arena.
Rusty, we're here right off of the court here at Oracle Arena. There's confetti all around us. We're about a little over an hour removed from one of the more interesting games of the season. Obviously, the Warriors' final regular season game at Oracle Arena after 47 years here. It was a pretty eventful night.
It was.
You know, I mean, you knew it was going to be somewhat eventful just because of, you know, all that goes into this being their last regular season game at Oracle. But they come out, Steph unveils the We Believe jerseys, which was a really cool moment. And then they go out and play one of their better games of the season, completely destroy a pretty good Clippers team in the third quarter, win by 27. Very convincing win to lock up the number one seed. And also, in doing so, you knock Clippers down to the number eight seed. The Clippers only have one game left against the Jazz. So it's looking like there's a really good chance that they're going to be playing the Clippers in the first round. What do you think about that matchup compared to the other possible matchups, which are Oklahoma City and San Antonio?
Yeah, I think it's a good matchup for the Warriors for a number of reasons. One, the travel is way easier than trying to get to San Antonio or Oklahoma City. It keeps you away from the venom of Oklahoma City that Kevin Durant would have to deal with in going there. And then also the matchup, I think, is better for the Warriors. At this point, the Warriors are not thinking about first rounds, right? They're thinking about making a long run through middle of June. And you want a series where you're not physically getting beat up in the first round. That's exactly what a Clippers series would be. They don't have a bunch of big guys that are going to be in there banging with anybody. Right. And you saw it tonight. I think the Warriors would feel really, really comfortable in a series like that.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine, Andrew Greif, who does a great job covering the Clippers for the LA Times before the game. And we both agreed that if this is the first round matchup, it'll probably be a situation where it's like a tight five game series.
All right. Yeah.
Maybe even four. Yep. But it'll take some energy to get those four or five games. Because like you said, they're really tough. You have Patrick Beverley, who did not play tonight, who has always been a menace for the Warriors. Lou Williams is as tough against the Warriors as any player in the league. He's had a 50-point game against them last season. You know he's going to go off. Montrezl Harrell's tough. They have a lot of good role guys, and you know they have nothing to lose. They're the underdog. They're really well coached. I have no doubt in my mind the Warriors are going to win that series if that's the case. But you know, at this point, it's all about preserving as much energy as humanly possible when you're chasing a three-peat, something that is very hard to do. I do honestly think that the travel aspect is important. What do you think? As someone who covered the league longer than I have, how big is that?
I think it's huge, and I know during the regular season, the travel is much more arduous than it is during the playoffs. In the playoffs, you go to a city, you're there for a couple of days to acclimate, play a couple games in that city before you go home. But I still think it's a big deal. When you're flying across the country, when you're changing time zones, that takes its toll on the guys, and you see that. L.A., Portland, either one of those, obviously that wouldn't be the case. It's a quick flight. And we heard Stephen Curry talk about that after the game. You know, even a guy like that who isn't usually thinking about those kind of things has said, yeah, I mean, L.A., obviously, you want to be off the plane as long as possible. Think about the guys who are dealing with lingering injuries, Iguodala, Livingston, all those guys. Time on the plane is swelling on all those injuries, right? Like, it's a miserable time getting on and off planes, being on the planes, getting on and off buses. So the more you can avoid that time in the air, more you can avoid transferring planes, transferring buses, that's all better for a run that you're trying to do for the third time in a row to go late into June.
Yeah, I also think that there's kind of a mental aspect to it. As you know, anyone who follows the league knows almost all these guys have some sort of tie to LA. They either have a summer house there, or they have a lot of friends there. They have places they like to go. They have their spots. Almost all these guys spend some segment of the summer, every summer, in LA. And I think just that comfortability when you're going to be there for 4 or 5 days at a time, I think that helps too. I don't think that Warriors fans should hear that and be worried that that's going to lull them into some false sense of security and make them more apt to lay an egg. I think it's good for them to be mentally in a good place throughout these first couple series as you're getting on in the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree with that it can work that way. I guess the fear of that would be, do you get too comfortable? The Warriors are good for at least one absolute meltdown in LA a year because it is comfortable, because a lot of the family travels with them. That's where their focus is. They go on shopping trips. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that I guess there is some
that's
of that.
That's usually the Lakers, though.
That's right.
They always lay an egg at Staples against the Lakers because they don't take the Lakers seriously because they've been bad. This is specifically I'm talking about pre-LeBron Lakers. But no, I hear your point though. I don't see that being an issue in the playoffs though.
And yeah, that's the thing I was going to say. And I don't see it often being an issue with this team. Just a couple weeks ago, Coach Kerr was talking about the need to get on the road, the need to get away and to spend some time with each other in the locker room, extended time in the locker room, extended bus rides. And so a lot of times that can help you kind of focus when you're away from things. So I don't think this team is one that they're so playoff tested. I don't think they're one that you have to worry about their focus all that much. They can go to any city and do it. But an LA flight is a lot easier than all the other ones.
So, Rusty, I'm pretty sure most of our listenership is probably familiar with you. Obviously, Rusty was my predecessor on the Warriors beat. Covered them for 8 seasons,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Until the last two that I covered when they were in the finals, I covered a lot of teams that were mathematically eliminated by the All-Star break. It's a different beat these days. It's the attention that's on it is unbelievable. How long the season is. We're talking about the players trying to deal with load management. And you know what this is like now. You're on the road all the time. You don't see the cities. You see the airports and the arenas and on to the next place. It's a grind.
For sure. It's a fun grind, though.
It is.
I always say I'd much rather this than cover an irrelevant team.
Right.
Because, you know, the thing about the NBA is regardless of who you cover, it's going to be a grind. And I can't help but feel bad for those beat writers who are covering teams that have no chance of winning anything. And they still have to wake up at, 4 a.m. for that 6 a.m. flight and be there and do all this work and for teams that A, maybe aren't that interesting, and B, people maybe don't care about. So I always keep that perspective, and I don't forget that. But one thing that was interesting, I'm glad we were able to get you on the pod tonight, because there were a few things that happened tonight that were parallels to the era that you covered. And one thing that I thought was really interesting was that Steph wore the Monte Ellis jersey to the last regular season game at Oracle. The average Warriors fan has some idea of what the background story is. What can you kind of just flesh out what that background story is and what the significance you thought of him wearing that tonight was?
Yeah, I thought it showed a lot of growth in Stephen Curry, because when Monte Ellis addressed the media for the first time after Steph got drafted, he said, "We can't play together. We can't win together. We can't play together. It's impossible." Turned out he was right.
Yeah.
But it was so shocking. Media days are usually days of hope and everything's great and we're going to win a championship, right? And he came in just saying, "No, there's no chance. This isn't going to work." And for a couple years, it became obvious that it wasn't going to work. And Monte Ellis was not one of those kind of veteran players who took the young guys in under his wing, right? Like he wasn't doing any favors for Steph. He wasn't teaching him any of the ins and outs. So there was a lot of, in that relationship that needed to be mended. And so I thought that showed something from Stephen Curry tonight that he at least appreciated what Monte meant to Oakland, to the Warriors franchise, and that he wanted to give him that nod. And Monte reached out to him on Instagram too, which I thought was cool. Because as far as I know, I don't think they've stayed in contact at all, and I don't think they ever really had a relationship. Yeah, yeah. So to me, that showed some strides there. And it was remarkable to me because it made me think back about everything that happened between those two. That the team was always better when one of them was off the floor. Mm-hmm. Steph had a lot of injuries during those times, and Monte would go through runs where he was great. Monte had some injuries, and Steph, the end of Steph's rookie year, they're down to six players. Nelly called them Curry's boys, and they were fantastic. It was a great thing to watch. And then when the trade comes up for Bogut, the Warriors were, at that point, Stephen Curry's ankles were shot. They didn't know who he was. And they basically said, Milwaukee, you can have either one of the guards. We just got to get rid of one of them, and we want Bogut in return. And just think of how different this franchise would be if Milwaukee chooses Stephen Curry instead of Monte Ellis.
Yeah.
And that brought all those memories back when you see him wearing that jersey, right?
Well, was Steph really on the table with that Milwaukee trade?
Absolutely,
really?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Yeah, they talk about that all the time. So Larry Riley and Bob Myers had a lot of great relationships in Milwaukee, and they were going back and forth. They wanted Bogut. They wanted to change the franchise. They wanted to be big at every position. They wanted to be sound defensively. And so that's what they wanted. They wanted to go get Bogut, and they knew they needed to get rid of one of the guards. They just didn't know which one. And they
was it not super clear at that point who it
wasn't,
it should be?
It wasn't, because Stephen Curry wasn't near the player he is now, right? But also,
and he had the ankle.
He was going back in for the second ankle surgery, and so nobody knew. Not only that he wasn't going to become an MVP, but nobody knew if he could play, if he could walk, right? So it wasn't clear. And Monte was playing some of the best ball of his life at that point. I think he had, after they won in Sacramento before the trade, I think he had him within three games of being an eight seed. So, and back then, that meant something to the Warriors. Yeah. They were in a race. So, it was unclear which way the Warriors wanted to go. And from everything I've always been told from Joe Lacob, Bob Myers, Larry Riley on that, they basically left it to Milwaukee to decide which guard they took, and they took Monte Ellis.
Was Larry Harris the GM there?
Not at that
point. He was a consultant. Yeah. He was a scout with the Warriors at that point, right?
Yep.
I've always kind of found Monte Ellis's legacy with the Warriors interesting, because I'm not really sure. I mean, I think I know what it is now, but I guess as someone who wasn't around the team when he was on the Warriors, what do you think it should be? Because right now it seems like his legacy is Warriors fans will look at him as kind of the last, you know, tie to the mediocrity, and as the guy who, by getting rid of him, opened the door for the Warriors to become the Warriors. Because obviously it wasn't just Steph. It was, you know, freeing up more minutes for Clay to become Clay, and then obviously adding Bogut, who is a really key defensive guy. That trade was probably the most important trade in franchise history. And you know, it's interesting because this is a guy who had some really good moments with the Warriors, was a franchise guy. So how do you look at it?
And that trade let them tank the rest of the season so that they were able to hold on to this number 7 pick and get Harris and Barnes, and luck out and get Draymond Green.
Right.
Nobody knew what he
position
was going
to
become.
Positioned for the 35th pick in the second round, which ended up being pretty important.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it absolutely changed the franchise. I think Monte Ellis will always be beloved by Warriors fans for a lot of reasons. One, he was small in stature and played hard, and I think a lot of fans relate to that kind of thing. Plus, he was their own. He came out of high school, right? This was the
late second round pick.
Yeah, this was the only he was the Warriors player. He was their guy.
Even though he's from Mississippi, kind of represented some of that Oakland
grit grime for sure, and the way he went about it, that oftentimes he was the littlest guy on the floor and he wasn't backing down from anybody. He was going to the rim and doing his thing, and there's always going to be an element of people who think that, look, somebody's going to score 20 points on every bad team, right? There has to be somebody who does that, but he did it in a flashy way. He did it in a way that people could relate to. And I think it goes along, like, I think you see a little bit now, even with guys like Kevin Durant who are here, who you hear all the time, like, maybe the Warriors fans haven't totally accepted him because he's not one of the, he wasn't drafted by the franchise, you know? And Monte was, he was their guy. He developed here. His best years were here. And so I think that makes, and he played every night when the team was really bad. Like, that never stopped his effort. And so I think the fans will always relate to that. And you know, things couldn't have worked out better from trading him. And as you mentioned, opening the door for Steph, opening the door for Klay Thompson, keeping a couple of picks that became very important. But people will always remember how hard he played. And I remember that they always thought that, you know, at that point, there was no idea of having four or five All-Stars every year. There was right. trying to get one in the game. Right.
And he almost made it one or two
year
years,
after right. year. Yeah. And there was always that argument of, do you look at the stats or the wins? And, you know, can a player who's putting up huge numbers on a bad team go to the All-Star game? And so for a lot of ways, he represented hope. He was the last holdover from the We Believe team and represented hope for where the team was going to go. And it never panned out the way that people wanted, but I think people will always love him here.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the famous, you know, booing of Joe Lacob. I mean, that it's crazy to even think about that, but that just showed how much this fan base loved Monte Ellis. And I guess, you know, I don't know if a decision on this has been made or how much they've talked about this. Do you think Monte Ellis should have his jersey number retired? By the Warriors.
No. Oh, no.
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 Is that not – that's not even something that should be discussed? I mean
– No. I'm of the belief that if you're not in the Naismith Hall of Fame, which is the easiest Hall of Fame in the world to get into because they take the best high school players, best college players, best international players, best, you know, best coaches, best officials. If you had any impact in basketball at any level, you find your way into the Naismith Hall of Fame. Monte Ellis is not sniffing the Naismith Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So how can he have his number retired?
Right. I personally feel like someone like Baron Davis maybe should.
Okay.
Just because of the fact that he was the leader of that.
Of one good team.
Yeah, but it was a really important team.
It was. I'll give you that. Yeah, yeah. And maybe as free agency happens more and more where there aren't going to be a ton of Kobe's and Tim Duncan's and Stephen Curry's who play their whole career in one place. Yeah, maybe a 1 year guy can earn that kind of.
Yeah, I guess he really was only on the team for a year.
Yeah.
That almost never happens.
But you're right. I mean, you see tonight the way that the fans and even the players react to We Believe the electricity that team created. I don't even know if you were to take a guy off of that team to retire his jersey, it would be Jason Richardson, right?
Probably just because he's meant more to the actual franchise. Yeah, it would probably be Jason Richardson. Baron Davis was really the leader of that team.
Absolutely. Yeah, or Stack Jack, you know. Baron Davis was the best player on that team for sure. And we're missing the obvious one. The person who's going to get a retirement banner is Don Nelson off that
group. Right.
So,
as he should.
Yeah.
I mean, they need some sort of representative in the rafters
that's right and how you do it, well, maybe not, maybe they'll just take Dirk's dent in the wall and bring that over and that'll be the representative.
I think they are doing that, aren't they?
Yeah. So maybe that'll be how it's always remembered.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Tonight was a great reminder. I feel like no matter what what this era of Warriors achieves, that We Believe team, I don't want to say Warriors, it'll mean as much to Warriors fans, but it feels like it's in the same stratosphere for sure.
It's so interesting because there's stuff all the time that harkens back to it. Like even when it gets loud in here now, you'll see the tweets or hear the mentions of, well, it's not We Believe loud.
I mean, Steven said that.
Yeah.
Because he was calling that game six.
And what that team did to... They made late season trades and won 16 of 21 games to finish the season just to qualify for the playoffs and to knock off a number one seed with the MVP. Like to break, what was it, 15 year hiatus from the playoffs? So that will always mean something to this play. Now, what's going to the Chase Center is a team that goes to the finals every year and it's just expected, right? So maybe it won't be remembered the way it is, but in this building, in Oracle, that We Believe team will always be held in high esteem.
And when Steph, you know, took off his warm-ups and showed everyone the uniform tonight, for me it was like, oh yeah, of course. Like, they have to wear those uniforms tonight. like it would almost would have been wrong if they had it. And I hadn't thought about it until they actually did it. But, you know, it was the perfect way to go out, I thought. And the cool thing was it sounded like it was a player-driven idea. I think Steph had a big say in them doing it, which just shows, you know, the pulse they have on what the fans want and what matters. Because I think, as you kind of alluded to, that team, that We Believe team, connected with this fan base, mm-hmm. specifically. Like there was a relationship there that can never be replicated, and to kind of give it back to the fans was pretty cool. And also, they're pretty cool uniforms.
They were, yeah. As Draymond said at the end of his line, and it doesn't hurt that they're dope uniforms, right?
Yeah.
He's right. And it's funny that you say, when you saw him reveal it, that you said, oh, of course. That was my exact reaction. And then I kind of beat myself up for, why didn't I think of that?
I didn't, like, yeah.
The Warriors got so much right tonight. From the uniforms to Rick Barry, Sleepy Floyd, Mo Spates being in the building. They got so much right tonight. But to me, the fact that they got this done with the uniforms was right on. And we should say that the NBA helped out with this a lot, too. You know, a lot of times when teams are trying to break out a new uniform, it literally takes years to get the approval. And for this to happen in a couple months, and for Nike to jump on board, who had never made the We Believe uniforms, for them to jump on board and get this done, it took a lot of people to make it all happen. And it worked out because it was exactly right. It was an of course moment.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it was, you know, the cool thing too was just seeing what jersey the players chose to wear. Obviously, we talked all about Steph wearing Monte Ellis, which I just thought was really interesting. And then, you know, Draymond wearing Matt Barnes, who was a good friend of his from the championship team a couple years ago. You know, it's just kind of cool seeing who they choose to pick. And, you know, Steph's been wearing those jerseys now for over a week or so, and he's worn Andres Biedrins. He's worn, you know, Draymond's worn Jason Richardson, who, you know, is also a fellow Saginaw guy. So it's just, I find that stuff interesting. Yeah. You know, it shows you a little sneak peek into what they care about and what their personal affiliations are.
And it's interesting because Steph was trying to hint at this We Believe thing for the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
For the last five home games, he wore jerseys of past players, and he aimed to wear five We Believe jerseys, but Draymond stole his Jason Richardson jersey, so he had to move in a Tim Hardaway one there shortly.
Right.
So we should have picked up on this and known that it was going to be Monte.
He also had a comment earlier in the season that was basically the one mistake we've made is that we haven't brought back the We Believe jerseys. Yeah. Because they have, like, you know, the Run TMC jerseys. Right. They've had that kind of stuff, the Old City jerseys. But yeah, he's right. Like, that you should be bringing back. I think maybe the higher ups thought it was not far enough removed or something like that. It wasn't truly retro yet because it was only 12 years ago. But, you know, I as someone who grew up in the, you know, 90s, as a 90s kid, I personally love, like, the early 2000s, late 90s NBA gear, like the old, you know, Damon Stoudemire Raptors jerseys and Vancouver Grizzlies. Like I think, you know, the millennials of today love that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And we're seeing it around the league, right? Like, Charlotte got rid of the Bobcats and went back to the old Hornets jerseys. And
Which was also, like, a no-brainer.
It was an of-course moment. Yeah,
yeah,
that's exactly right.
And it feels so much better. I mean, I never went when they were the Bobcats, but it feels right going to Charlotte and seeing the Beehive and seeing their logo, because, like, that is Charlotte.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that era of when a lot of those expansion teams came in and the jerseys and the colors started getting so cool, I think that's when the game really started thriving. And so there is a place, I think, in a lot of fans' hearts for all of that stuff. So it's great to see them do these kind of things.
So you got to cover the start of this dynasty. I took over right after they signed Durant. So I feel like I've kind of covered the second half. Right. Like our tenures kind of broke right at the right time, I think, because I think the history books are going to look at this as two halves of a dynasty in some ways. So as someone who you've obviously been helping me out a lot more the past few weeks, and you're going to be with me throughout the playoffs, hopefully going forward into next season. What do you think about the current iteration of this dynasty? And do you feel like we're witnessing, I don't want to say the end of a dynasty, but do you think that we're witnessing what will be, you know, the last year that this is a team that's a prohibitive favorite?
Yeah, I do. I think this is the last year of it. I think a lot of us believe that the Kevin Durant deal to New York is done already, that they're just playing it out. And I think the Warriors, I think we all know DeMarcus Cousins is leaving. And I think the Warriors have big decisions to make about Draymond Green. I think he's going to want to start talking about extension this offseason, even though he's not up for one. And they got to make a decision for a guy whose body's breaking down and who needs to play at an insane level of energy and to be the player that he is. They've got to start making a decision about whether that makes sense. They don't think he's a max player. I'm sure he does think he's a max player. And so they got to start making a decision. Now, it doesn't completely break down the dynasty if they lose those guys, right? You still have the greatest backcourt in the history of the game. I've always said
as long as they have Steph and Klay, they'll be one of the best teams in the league. Will they be what they've been in the past couple of years? Probably not. But they'll be great.
And maybe as important is we think this is Sean Livingston's last year and Andre Iguodala's getting
I feel
really
confident
close.
Saying it's Sean Livingston's last year. He effectively told me that.
So, those are a lot of important, on top of the All-Star guys, those are a lot of really smart people in the locker room, guys who are willing to play.
Yeah, and Andre's an interesting, you know, question mark too. If they have all this turnover, and you're so deep in the luxury tax and he's making so much money, you know, do you want to have him next season?
Right. Now, here's the other thing I will say about the Warriors is I didn't see how in the world they were ever going to bring Andre here. Right? They had to shed terrible contracts in Biedrentz, Richard Jefferson, Brandon Rush.
That was the single, I think, most impressive move that Bob Myers ever made.
Yeah.
Because it so much went into it.
To get that done, to get those bad contracts off, to bring in a free agent, I mean, it was a fantastic move. And so I always give the Warriors that credit that, okay, from the outside, we're looking at it and we're saying, look, Kevin Durant's gone, DeMarcus Cousins is gone, you got to make a decision on Draymond Green.
Right.
So what's their front court going to be? Well, the Warriors have proven to us time and time again that they're not going to go out there with a bunch of bums. Like,
right.
They're going to figure out something to and we keep hearing about Anthony Davis and why would the Warriors not be in the talks for that? If there's a superstar out there, Joe Lacob is going to have the conversations about it.
Right. I mean, at the end of the day, one thing I've learned covering this league is it's all about ownership and it's all about leadership. And the Warriors have phenomenal ownership. They have probably the best GM in the league. They have one of the best coaches in the league. And obviously they have a couple guys we know feel pretty confident saying are going to be around for a long time, and Steph and Klay. So they got a lot of pieces. And, you know, you look at every offseason they've had in the past few years, and they've always exceeded expectations. You know, the question was, what are you going to do last summer? What are you going to do with that mid-level? Like, maybe Tyreek Evans? That would be great. And then they go out and get DeMarcus Cousins, you know? Like, and then, you know, when they're hot, you know, they're putting together that center rotation, out of nowhere, David West, out of nowhere, Zaza, for less than their market value. In David West's case, way less than his market value. I think there's going to be more guys like that. I think, you know, a guy that could make sense, you know, for this team next season could be like a Rudy Gay. Yep. And that to me would be like a best case scenario, because assuming that KD leaves, you're going to be capped out. All you really have is a mid-level. I think Rudy Gay, based off what he's done this season at a mid-level, would be phenomenal. I think he'd play really well. I think if you've noticed, Steve Kerr seems to be a huge fan of him.
One of the most likable guys in the league, and obviously a big Team USA basketball buddy of Stephen Curry's. So anytime you can keep Curry happy, you're probably making the right move.
Yeah. And, you know, then you got to go get a center on maybe a minimum. But like we said, I think there's going to be some dominoes falling. This is going to be probably the most important summer this team has ever had, which is just an interesting backdrop for this chase, because this whole season has felt it's felt like everyone kind of knows that things are going to change. And so they're kind of just trying to appreciate the moment, but also know that, you know, you can't let the reality of the situation in terms of knowing that people are going to leave distract you from what the current goal is. Right. And that's been the interesting dynamic that this team has had, because I think if you injected every player in that locker room with truth serum and you asked them, is Kevin Durant leaving? Almost pretty much all of them would say yes. I don't think Kevin's necessarily told anyone directly he's leaving, but I think they all think he's gone. And I think a lot of people think there's a good chance that Draymond's gone for the reasons that you kind of alluded to. So it's going to be interesting, man. Yeah. It's going to be really interesting. Never a dull day.
No. And one of the great things about covering the Warriors is that not only do they exceed what we think is going to happen during the offseason, like, they're so creative.
Right.
Like, they wanted Robin Lopez. They were interested in Gasol. And when that stuff dried up, they go get Bogut, who I'm not sure many of us even knew was playing in Australia.
Right,
right.
Right.
And now maybe they've created
something. And he's been great.
Yeah. Now maybe they've created something where they can do this every year. Like, he goes back and gets his part ownership in Australia.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Why not?
Maybe. Anything's possible. Yeah. Everyone jokes about that light years quote from Joe Lacob, but the reason that caught fire is because he hit on some truth.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things behind the scenes of this team that I get to see on a daily basis that you're seeing next level thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm personally really interested in what they do in Santa Cruz and the G League. And there's a lot of things they're even doing on that level that the average fan's not even aware of. That is just kind of next level thinking and symptomatic of how they operate. You know, I wrote a story a couple weeks ago about this 18-year-old Serbian guy that they found in Belgrade in some random gym, and they're basically trying to stash him down in Santa Cruz, and he's the youngest player in G League history, and they're trying to play him as little as possible because he's this hidden gem, and they secretly really want him to be their next, you know, one of their building blocks going forward, and they want to make sure that the word isn't out on him because they want to take him in the second round. And if people actually know how good he is, he's a lottery level, at least late first round talent. But the fact that they're even thinking like that, right. Like no one else is even using the G League like that.
Yep. Yep. And I think that's something that we hear from them all the time is that, they're not scared to think big picture or think things that seem outrageous to us. Joe Lacob wants people to be thinking that, and then he wants them to figure out how to do the outrageous things.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people in this league and other sports where it's just like their first reaction is, oh, that can't happen, and they just move on.
Right.
Well, Lacob says, well, let's figure out how to make it happen. Right.
Yeah. It's the whole venture capital
mindset.
Awesome, Rusty. Well, I really appreciate you joining me. It's always fun picking your brain, and you know, I feel like I learn a lot just talking to you because you've covered this team much longer than I have. So thanks for coming on.
Sure thing. And you're gonna have to explain this to me. There's confetti everywhere. Does that mean they won the championship tonight? Is that how that works?
I don't think they did. Okay. I think that might happen in a couple months.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah. Makes sense.
All right, thanks, man.
I want to thank Rusty Simmons for joining me on this week's podcast. It's always good picking his brain about past Warriors teams. Warriors Off Court is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Audrey Cooper is the editor-in-chief. If you like this show, we'd love it if you subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts. And if you've got a minute to give us a quick review, that helps us build our audience so we can keep growing. Follow me on Twitter at @con_cron and email me at cleturno@sfchronicle.com. Support Warriors Off Court and a lot of great journalism with a subscription to the San Francisco Chronicle. There are print and digital editions. Find out more at sfchronicle.com/subscribe.